Let's go. Time for another edition of Colt Gennaro Chat, a Saturday afternoon pod. I'm Jeremy, joined by Robbie, and we are going to be discussing a whole host of things, Robbie, but most notably, Atletico's scrappy, gutty 2-1 win over Cádiz on Friday night at the Wanda Metropolitano, a result that, if you can believe it, for the time being, takes Atletico up to third. How about that?
Yeah, not bad. The run continues.
Yeah, 4 straight wins in La Liga, no kidding. This is Atletico's longest winning streak in La Liga in over a year. Unbeaten in 5, a pretty good run of form entering a massive game Tuesday that we'll be previewing toward the end of the program. But as far as the recent performances go, Robbie, this was not one to really write home about. Not a particularly memorable game or a fluid performance from Atletico, but this is the kind of game earlier this year where they play this badly, they would have lost. What was the key to turning it around and getting the win and holding on for the win on Friday?
Yeah, I think we tend to kind of rewrite history sometimes and look back on performances or seasons or eras in general where the team was incredible all the time. Like Alex Ferguson, everyone thinks that they won every game 4 or 5-0. They didn't, and neither did Simeone. And neither did Simeone's best Atletico teams. There were these scrappy games where things didn't go exactly according to plan, but at the end of the day, they got the win. I think that you just have to accept that there are going to be games like this. But having said that, in terms of this actual game on its own, I think Atletico, and I think what we saw and what we'll get into now, is the fact that Simeone knew at halftime, or he knew that Koke on the right of midfield doesn't work. And I think that this was the last attempt, possibly, to get to fit Koke into the team, and it just didn't work. And I think at halftime when he moved it, and not so much that Koke is a negative in general, but Marcos Llorente needs to start on the right of midfield, and it's as simple as that. I look back, I've been actually writing about this. In every game that Atletico struggled, not every single game, but in the majority of games that I've looked at this season, the problem was that either Llorente was too central, he was playing at right back, or else then occasionally we coincided with that Koke was sitting as the pivot. And I think that Simeone realised that. And the reason I'm saying that is because when he put Marcos Llorente at right midfield, Carrasco played at right back.
Yeah.
He didn't care who was there. The point of that move was Marcos Llorente can't be there. He can do it. It doesn't mean he should do it. And I think that Simeone is starting to realise that. And also, it's no coincidence that Atletico were very, very erratic at the first half of the season when Llorente was playing it right back. He was missing through muscle injuries. He was struggling a little bit. He's back now, and it was no coincidence either that the goal came from that right-hand side.
Yep, and I think that's a very interesting point you brought up about the strategic decision, a tactical decision in the second half to kind of have Carrasco and Llorente interchange and kind of hand off defensive duties to one another. And the winning goal did come from that side with Llorente playing further forward. That was a huge moment in the game when Simeone made that switch at halftime, because it got Carrasco away from the left. All 3 players on the left-hand side had been booked in that first half. Reinildo, Carrasco, and Rodrigo De Paul, who ultimately scored the game winner. So it was really important for Simeone to at least try to balance out the attack, because that first half was frankly dire. Atletico get the early goal from Joao Felix. Yeremias Ledesma pulls a Gigi Donnarumma, gives away the ball in his own box, and Joao Sigue on fire, as they would say in Spain, Robbie. That's now 5 goals in his last 7 games in all comps. Best form he's been in since joining Atletico? Is it finally here, Simeone and Joao Felix are on the same wavelength?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think that what we've seen is, or sorry, in previous decent spells, I think Joao Felix, it was a result of different circumstances and things like that. I think now, aside from the goal, I think now we're seeing Joao Felix in a more central role. He feels more central. He's picking up the ball in more in positions where he can do damage. That confidence is growing, and I think that we're starting to see Atletico reaping the rewards of playing Joao Felix regularly in a central position.
He's running more and he's pressing more too. And hard work, you reap the rewards from that, as Simeone is fond of saying. And this was kind of a gift from Ledesma, but without Joao's running and his awareness, maybe nothing comes of this. Maybe the pass sails harmlessly over the boundary or through his legs. But it was, and he hopped all over this pass and deposited it cleanly into the net. He loves scoring early goals, Robbie. I don't know if this is really thematic or not, but he has scored several goals inside the first 10 minutes in the last few months. The opener against Granada, the opener against Betis, the opener against Man United, this one on Friday. You think there's anything to that?
I definitely think there is. And we said this before. We were talking about how Atletico tend to start the game well. And even this is even during their worst spells, they'd always start the game really well, to be 10 minutes at the start of the first half and the second half, when they would be look like a team that was really aggressive on the ball and trying to make something happen. And the problems came when a team would figure them out, and then just Atletico would go into their shell, and then you turn it into kind of a war of attrition, and they just wouldn't know how to break you down. And we saw that regularly. Whereas now, Atletico are still starting well, but now they've got Felix on form, and that's they're reaping rewards from his excellent goal finishing ability.
So they get the goal inside the first 3 minutes. It's looking pretty good. Atletico won the past three meetings with Cádiz. Hopefully, from their perspective, sailing to a victory here with no injuries, no controversy, no undue stress, right? Wrong. The rest of the first half, Cádiz are really all over Atletico. And you got to give Sergio and the team he selected a lot of credit. Their structure was really, really good for most of this game. Their pressing was intense, insistent, and really intelligent. Just the ability to get a foot into a passing lane or step in the middle of a passing lane and win the ball, absolutely critical. And Atletico could not get going. The weather didn't help. It was really wet and rainy at the Wanda Metropolitano on Friday. But the structure was really good from Cádiz, and they ultimately get an equalizer just before halftime. But you mentioned Koke earlier, and I do want to talk about Koke's fit in this team this year. He comes back after missing three games, immediately back into the 11, and it's a DePaul Herrera Koke midfield three. Cádiz are just all over it. They just waltz right through this midfield time and time again in the first half and continue to apply pressure on Oblak's goal, which ultimately the reward is the Negredo header on the stroke of halftime. Koke completed 16 passes in his 45 minutes on Friday, Robbie. The progressive distance on these 16 passes, 39 yards. The passing is too slow. It's too lateral. It doesn't progress the play. And Koke is not strong enough defensively to cover for Llorente on the right-hand side. So what does Simeone do? What does he do with him?
I think Koke is finished in this version of Simeone's Atletico. I think that, and I would worry for Koke's future in general, because he is, the game is played now in transition, and it's a huge part of how Atletico Madrid build. And with Llorente down the right, and has been even since when Trippier was there, that it was so important down that right hand side. It's basically how they won that Liga last year, that kind of those overlaps, and Llorente powering into the final third. And I think the Koke, the problem isn't so much, we've spoken that ad nauseum about his passing, it's too safe, but you're losing with the passing. It's more, as you said, defensively, for example, the cross for Negredo's goal, you might say, oh, well, what's he supposed to do? What was Llorente do? The problem, to begin with, is that Llorente would have been in a more, would have covered more ground, so he wouldn't have even had to make a sprint to close that down, I think. And then also, when you're getting out in transition, Koke offers nothing down that right hand side, whereas when Llorente is there, at least you can look and pop the ball into space, and he'll drive onto it and maybe pick it up, or at least put the defender under pressure and win it. Even give away a free or win a corner, win a throw, and then it's a game of territory, like, and you can at least start to plan from there. Whereas a Koke, the pass is non. So all of a sudden, Rodrigo de Paul or Herrera gets the ball. He looks out to his right, sees no, it's not on. I have to turn around. You're easier to press. You're more predictable, and I think that's what you're losing when you're is not there. And I think that's exactly why Simeone needs to get him there, and that's why he played Carrasco behind him at times on Friday night, because Carrasco, excellent dribbler, great at progressing the ball, but not pure power. Marcos Llorente is, he will go through you if he has to in order to kind of get on the end of that ball. He's just breathing down the defenders' necks, like tripping them up, and like it must be a nightmare to play against, because he is really powerful, and if he gets a step on you, he's gone. And that just conditions everything about how you play. You have to take an extra step back, so the defender isn't as isn't ready to join into transition, and you just have to be so wary of that. And I think that we saw too, like, given the fact that Koke was, and Herrera and Rodrigo de Paul were available, and I think that if this happened 6 months ago, or I don't know how many months ago, a few months ago, it would have been Koke, Herrera, Rodrigo de Paul would have been on the right, Llorente would have been on a right back, and it would have been Koke Herrera. Instead, he realizes Rodrigo de Paul has to be central, and we saw him getting the goal in that more central role, and Koke got kind of shifted out to the side, and it was just like I think Simeone is kind of torn on this one, because I mean he's trying to obviously be as successful as he possibly can with this team, given what's left to play for this season. And he's also trying to be as loyal as he can to a player who has been with him through it all since he got there. And it's difficult, you know, and Simeone is loyal to his players in that sense, and he thinks a lot about family and he talks about that a lot, and kind of sticking with guys and trusting them and stuff. And I just think that Koke wants to do it, and he would do anything that Simeone asks him. It's just that he physically can't offer Simeone what he needs right now. So yeah, look, I mean, the team could be named at the week and in the middle of the week now for United, and Koke could be centre, and I could look very, very stupid, but I just get the sense that he was accommodating Koke a little bit on Friday night. It didn't work out, and he got hooked at half time. Really, really not a good look, it also doesn't really, even if it's not Koke's fault, the fact that it was Koke's return after and Atletico were in the best run of their season. And during this run of form, that 45 minutes when Koke was on the field was the worst 45 minutes of that spell.
Yep.
He takes him off at halftime. Immediately, Atletico improve. Renan Lodi is going flying down the left, and Llorente and Carrasco are bombing up the right. And I just think that it, even if we're all wrong and Koke wasn't a problem, it certainly looks that way, you know, and he's going to get fingered for the crime.
And Koke is 30 years old now, and he's played more football than most 30-year-olds have played, because he's just been so ever-present over the past decade for Simeone. Has played, whenever he's been available, he's been selected and starting and played heavy minutes, providing defensive cover earlier in his career. He was one of the top assist providers in the country. So it's tough, and I think this fear is a few years in the making that Koke would not age particularly gracefully. And we've seen this really from the first weekend of the season. Koke has just not been at the races pretty much since the Euros. So I don't really know what the solution is here. Atletico are going to have to really explore this in the market. And Simeone, assuming he is the coach again next year, which I believe he will be, it's going to be difficult to face Koke out, but Atletico are playing significantly better without him, and Koke is his guy. Like, he's one of the only two players, alongside Jose Jimenez, that was on both title-winning teams in 2014 and last year. But no, I don't think there's really any doubt that Atletico immediately improved when Koke came off. The midfield was just so much instability when he was out there trying to accommodate him. And Cardiff just really enjoyed it in the first half. They were the better team. And they could have been a man up at halftime, Robbie, if the Reinildo red card had stood. Did you think this was a red card when it was initially shown by Gonzalez Fuertes?
I think that's a red card. You can't dive in with your 2 feet like that. No, he didn't get him. He didn't get the man. And I understand that. And that's maybe why the referee turned it over. But, like, you're diving in. You can't dive in with your 2 feet like that. Your 2 feet were off the ground. You're launching yourself into a tackle. And it's the players, it's the tacklers' job to make sure you're in control at all times, and he wasn't. He absolutely wasn't, and I cannot believe that the referee overturned it in the age of VAR. I've seen this with Ronaldo, or Ronaldo. he got sent off last night. He scored a hat trick tonight.
Yeah.
What a man! But I've seen this with him, and not just with his tackling, his positioning, and his he has one or two of these a game that where he just kind of loses his head.
Yeah, he's really aggressive.
Yeah, which is fine, absolutely perfectly fine when it works, and Simeone will probably be patting him on the back tonight, saying, "Look, well done, but just calm down a small bit, maybe." And because even his teammates are kind of, and you know it's bad. Like, these guys are professionals, and they know how body language can be interpreted, and they know that there's cameras everywhere around the stadiums, and they tend to watch what they're saying to each other, and they were like, You could see that they were telling Ronaldo, like, "Ronaldo, like, relax, will you? Please just calm down." And, you know, it kind of, he was walking with his head down, and like, I was like, this guy's head is completely gone here. And, that was just the first half. So, then straight after that, he jumped into another tackle, and even Simeone was like, "Oh my God, man."
Begging to get sent off here because he's just been booked.
Yeah, and he was pointing at the ball, like, I got the ball. I was like, "Man, do you realize how lucky you are?" And now, in fairness to him, he did get the ball in the second tackle, like, and there was no problem with that. It was just really risky. You see guys on yellows, like soft yellows, and they're being careful. And this guy was after getting so lucky with the red. And the next ball, or the next, like a couple of minutes later, he just launched himself again. And it's like, oh my God, get to half. It was weird. Weird, maybe not fun. I don't know if the fun is the word, but it is really fascinating watching. Like, this guy, you're waiting for the ball to get to him, and you're like, "Oh, what's he going to do? Like, what's he going to do? What's he going to do?" And I kind of do enjoy watching this. And I was wondering, is he going to make it to halftime? And it was kind of like a little subplot within the first half. Once he did that, I was like, his head's gone, and I was watching his body language, I was watching him, everything he was doing then, and I was like, what's he going to do next? But he survived it, and that's why Simeone signed him, and he obviously saw those traits in him and likes them, but you're playing with fire there too, yeah. You know?
Yeah, Atletico's defense needs this aggression, they need this physicality and this boldness that they've been lacking all year, really, and Reinildo has that, in large supply, which is, that's the positive. The negative, the bad news, is that he's lost his head. Like, he could have been half a dozen fouls in this game, Robbie. He could have been sent off in the second half just as easily. And for me, this is a challenging one, I think, because it was raining and because it was wet. And on one of the replays, it looked like Reinildo slipped. It looked like his left leg buckled a bit. And okay, it made it look like he jumped into Ruben Alcaraz. But that being said, it's still two-footed. He still goes studs up. And if it wasn't so wet and rainy, it would have been a red. But I think what saved him is the slip or the slippery conditions. But even then, it was a dangerous tackle. And he had six fouls in the game. And he could have been sent off anyway. I'm surprised he lasted all 90 minutes. But we talked about this a couple times since he signed. He's really important for Atletico's defense now. And it's happened very quickly because he's one of the few players in this defense that will take these kind of gambles, that will take these kind of risks. And more often than not, he's come out on the winning end of them.
Yeah, and if Simeone had his way, every one of his players would have that trait and would have that would be able to defend like him, because he is quite solid and he is strong. But the problem is, you can't. And this is where we were talking. Like, you look at a guy like Lucas Hernandez, who's amazing going up the field and can also defend. He's got really good strength and powerful runner, and. Yeah, likewise with Juan Fran, who was really, really, who was a winger turned into a fullback, but he could really, really defend, and this is the kind of balance that Simeone has been looking for: someone who can go forward, but who can also, or sorry, someone who can defend first, I think, is his thing, but then can offer something going forward. And for ages, he's been like Renan Lodi. Would be the flip side of that, where he's excellent and he offers way more going forward, defending really, really dodgy. And yeah, I think that the same with Mario Hermoso, who's not really a left back, and he tried to kind of turn him into a guy who could defend, but then it just didn't work because you're moving out of position. But Reinaldo seems to have that perfect blend of defend for probably, he's probably 70% defend, 30% going forward and providing something going forward. But you just said the good news is he's got some excellent skills and tactic traits and he's strong. The bad news is the man has lost his head completely. He's gone insane. I don't know if those two kind of balance each other out for it, but he's definitely a Diego Simeone style player.
Yeah, I think at some point in these next dozen games or so, the number of games that Letty have left this season, he will get sent off or something like that.
The balance is going to tip the other direction for him, and
you can probably take that to the bank. And Lodi had another really positive performance on Friday. Robbie comes in for Koke at halftime and really does do a job defensively. He really does get stuck in the tackle, made a few interceptions as well. Injury scare for him toward the end of the game, but then all of Atletico's players seem to be dropping like flies at the moment. That Reinildo-Lodi combination on the left, I really think there's something there, and I'm not sure what it's going to mean for Carrasco or Tomalema for the rest of the season into next season if both players stay, but I really think there's something here. Reinildo has that 70-30 defense to attack split. Lodi has it the other way, and Atletico have just looked much better with Lodi. And you wrote a column on this a couple weeks ago. They just look so much better with Lodi free to bound up and down the left flank.
Yeah, and you have to kind of be careful not to rate it too quickly. And obviously, we have to say what we see. But at the same time, you're kind of worried, like, is this just going to collapse now and he's just not going to do it? But definitely, he looks like a renewed... he looks like he's got a renewed energy about him. And he's... when he doesn't have that defensive responsibility, he tends to really get forward, and he's a flyer down that left wing. And yeah, definitely more of a left winger than a left back, just a traditional left back for sure. Even just physically looking at him, like, he didn't really kind of strike you as a Simeone style left back. He looked good and he's a great option there. But and he's probably going to have to play there now in the Champions League because Carrasco's out injured. But Thomas Lemar. I think in reality, and I really like Lemar, and I really, really do like him. I think he offers loads. But in reality, a fully functioning Atletico Madrid team playing the way that the way that Simeone wants them to play, Lemar probably doesn't make it, I would say, because he wants width on the left, and in reality, the only place where he's playing is on the left, and he wants to come inside and play more as kind of like a free eight maybe. Mm-hmm. and in reality, he's not going to offer enough defensively, physically, to play centrally. Ideally, Simeone has Rodrigo De Paul there. Thomas Lemar and Rodrigo De Paul are completely different players. And Rodrigo De Paul, this is why he wanted him, because he wants him to play in that, or this is his best position in that kind of a free eight position, and he just absolutely pile drives into the box. but can also mix it in the middle and in the trenches, like. So and Lamar doesn't do that, so he's only ever going to really have a spot in a fully functioning team at left midfield, and he doesn't play wide enough, he doesn't beat men enough, he's not that kind of a player, and Lodi is perfect for that. And I guess the only other position, and we've seen this, and this is actually great, so you've got your 4-4-2, you've got your goalie, you've got your forward to back, and you've got your four in midfield. The four in midfield is Carrasco / Lodi, Herrera, Condogbia, and DePaul, and Llorente. That's pretty much fine. And then in attack, as we saw last night, and it didn't really work, Griezmann, I think, is going to probably have to play a couple of games to get back up to speed. But you could see Joao Felix and Griezmann, or you could play Correa and Joao Felix. You can play Suarez maybe in Joao Felix. You can play a variety of different mixtures there. Maybe Lamar has a position as kind of a second striker in that kind of a setup. But yeah, in a fully functioning team, I think Lamar, and this is kind of why he didn't fit in at the start, is because you were kind of squeezing him into a position where he didn't really fit. So I think that Lamar is probably the odd man out here. But an excellent option off the bench, and an excellent guy who can kind of switch it up and keep the ball, beat a man, and progress the ball when you have a lead or when you need to kind of change your pace given the game state.
He's probably Atletico's most creative midfielder too, which makes this conversation super interesting. Like, Lemar has nearly 5 shot creating actions per 90 in La Liga this season, which is an outrageous amount. Part of why he was so good last season and has been sensational for a good chunk of this season was because he was playing that role in the 3-5-2. Atletico found the way to insert that extra midfielder by changing formations, and that's what's gotten the best out of Lemar. But now we see Atletico really functioning well in this modified 4-4-2. Lemar's not exactly a winger. When he played there in his debut season at Atletico, it didn't really go well because he's too wide. He shunted out wide. He can't cut into the middle to come inside it and dictate play and play passes forward. So it's possibly a conundrum, but I think Simeone will value having this kind of headache. And Lemar's close to renewing, so he has no desire to leave. And he's fought for his place once before. He's going to have to do it again.
Yeah, and I think there's more chances of him playing once Atletico get an elite number 5. Like, if Thomas Partey was still there, if Rodri was still there, I think you do probably see... And this is kind of, I guess, maybe what Simeone was looking towards, was kind of more of a 4-3-3 with one anchor and then two men kind of... running up and down. The problem is he doesn't have that guy, and Condogbia has been excellent for Atletico, but he's not Thomas Partey and he's not Rodri, so he's had to kind of sacrifice Herrera, or he needs the midfielders to tuck in beside the Condogbia or whoever he needs to play as that anchor. And unfortunately, Lamar just kind of Rodrigo de Paul does a better job, and so does Hector Herrera in that position.
Well, Rodrigo de Paul got the winner on Friday, Robbie. His first La Liga goal for Atletico since returning to Spain. He got one when he played at Valencia before leaving for Italy. And this was far and away Atletico's best move of the entire game. And Correa and Luis Suarez were both involved in it. It was a 1-2 down the right with Correa and Llorente. Ball comes into the box from Llorente. Suarez with a very clever layoff for Correa to attempt the shot. Ledesma saves it. Nobody tracks De Paul sprinting into the box, and he loops the ball in for the goal. That was pretty. And that's probably something Simeone had drawn up before the season, but for a whole host of reasons, we didn't see it until March 11th with 11 games to go. For De Paul, is that possibly a transformational moment for him? Because we've talked a lot this season about underperformance from the most expensive signing in all of Spain last summer. Could this be a moment that saves his season and potentially his Atletico career?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I don't know if there was ever... I think there was a kind of an understanding there that Rodrigo de Paul's struggles were Atletico Madrid's struggles first and foremost, rather than him just not playing well. And in fairness to him, he just kept his head down and just kept on working. The problem was he was just being played out of position, and then he was having to plug holes, and like when Llorente had to go back and Rodrigo de Paul's out right, I'd say this is what Simeone had planned for him. And this is like at the start of the season when we interviewed, when I talked to Conor Clancy, the Serie A journalist about it, he said that his best position is in the central role, maybe a number 10 kind of driving into the box, arriving late, and we didn't see that. I mean, I you know, the way you have kind of memories of a season, I don't actually think I can recall one of Rodrigo de Paul picking up the ball in the box or driving into the box, taking a shot. And yeah, he's just had to sacrifice for the greater good with Atletico. So I think there was always that understanding that this problem here isn't him. So yeah, you would hope that is the case. And then with Llorente out in the right and Rodrigo de Paul in the centre, it just gives you another dimension. It makes you much harder to defend against. It makes you more unpredictable. It gives you obviously more production from different places other than just Joao Felix or whoever it happens to be. And yeah, I think that this is his role, and this is where he feels most comfortable.
And something else that's giving Atletico options right now, Robbie, as Dermot Corrigan wrote in The Athletic this morning, is that Luis Suarez is practically accepting his role on the bench. He's entered as a substitute this season 14 times. He's never even come close to that number of substitute appearances. It's really weird to see this. Luis Suarez is one of the greatest strikers of this generation, one of the greatest strikers ever, and he's coming in off the bench as he enters the end of his career, the tail end of his career. Suarez surely can't be happy about this, but his accepting it, do you think it's having kind of a knock-on effect?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to convince a guy that he, or to for a guy to accept that he shouldn't be playing, is when you're winning without him. And the problem is when everything is going bad and everyone thinks they should be playing and everyone thinks they're the solution, and then they get angry because they're not playing and they lose, and then there's frustration. When you're winning, everything just seems easier. Like we saw that with Atletico, and we even on the podcast, everything was negative. Like we were being negative, we were giving out and complaining about Simeone and why are they so bad, and and it just felt like there was reports coming out and everything was so negative, and even their body language. And when you get a couple of wins, it's so important to just settle things down, and to, like, there's so much noise around the football team, and there's so much at stake that a run of bad wins can just start to compound, and the problems start to compound, and then every single thing becomes an issue, and even the things that aren't an issue become an issue. And I think that Suarez not playing, no one's even talking about it because Atletico are doing well. Now, if Atletico weren't doing well and Suarez still wasn't playing, you'd have all sorts of articles being written, you'd have all sorts of questions being put to Simeone, why isn't Suarez playing and stuff like that. But when you're winning, things just seem easier. And I think that Suarez, I don't know. I've absolutely no idea what's being said to him, but he is just a competitive guy, and I think a lot of the times with ultra-competitive people, and this is something that he probably should have got fixed, but it's just he couldn't help it. They'd often cut to him on the bench, and he'd be like upset and looking upset. I don't think that's necessarily that can be. I know it's very coach speak to say this, but like, that's what you kind of want to see. That's a good sign, rather than guys sitting on the bench having a laugh, saying like, oh yeah, sure, I didn't really care whether I played or not, you know. And that's what that's what turned Luis Suarez into, as you said, one of the best strikers ever. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just incredible. And not even, okay, he was technically excellent and he had all the skills, but his attitude, and he would put the fear of God into defenders, and just what a player. And like, he was sensational. And maybe he just accepts that, look, I've gone a year too far here. I've just pushed my body just a year too far, and I just can't get around the field anymore. And like, and I'm sorry, just my final point on that is that the tactics, and we spoke about them at length for when they weren't working. We were like, this doesn't make sense. Why are you playing Suarez when you're trying to do this, or right. What even are they trying to do? Whereas now I feel like you can at least see what Simeone is trying to do. And then if we can see it, obviously Simeone does have a better picture of what he's trying to do, and then he can translate that and explain that to Suarez and say, look, for what I'm trying to do, you can't right now do it. And you have to accept it because you've explained it to me. Whereas when you're not playing with any kind of a coherent style, Suarez is like, yeah, but why? Like, I don't. That's not a good enough explanation. You haven't given me a good enough explanation. Like, yeah, I think that when you're winning and when you're playing a coherent style, it's really hard for anyone to say anything negative. And I think that Atletico have been allowed to breathe a little bit in the last couple of weeks with this decent run.
And he looked pretty physically fit on Friday. A bunch of running for Suarez's by his standards, I suppose, at 35, coming off a host of knee problems and ankle problems and just aging. Father time comes for everybody. But Suarez showed a lot of intent on Friday. 8 pressing attempts in 31 minutes and a critical role in the eventual winning goal with that layoff to Correa. I think he's got one more big moment in him. At some point this season, he's going to have another moment to shine and he's going to score a big goal or set up a huge goal. It would be tough to see Suarez's Atletico career, brief though it may be, end on a whimper. I don't think really anyone wants to see that, but it's obvious now that this is the end for Suarez at Atletico and probably in La Liga. I don't know. There was a rumor that Sevilla had called after him. I can't imagine another another top drawer team in Primera giving him a shot next year. Just he can still score, but it takes a very specific style and very specific players and rhythm to get the best out of him at this point in his career.
Yeah, and what made him so special, that kind of unpredictability, is also what his specialness was his variety of and his different ways he could beat you. Whereas now you can't just plug and play him in as a number nine. He's got a very specific way he likes to play and receive the ball and get the ball, and you know, I mean, like, he's not quite a target man, but yeah, like another guy who just look, and he's had a highly successful career, unbelievably successful career.
Yeah.
So he probably won't mind as much, but he's another guy who the game just doesn't. That's not, because he did press at one stage. It's just he's at the age now where the pressing that's required of a top flight striker is he just can't do it anymore. So I don't know who would sign him. It would have to be a very kind of specific role or a really well set up team, or he'd have to accept maybe coming on for 30 minutes to. And he linked play quite well as well last night. I think he did well, and he can do that. And he's got excellent vision, and he's got excellent. He's got a lovely touch and good technique, so he can offer that. And once he accepts that role, I think he can still offer something for the next 11 or 12 games. But yeah, it does look like it's the end for sure.
Yeah, he's far from a useless forward, but it takes a lot of sacrifice and it takes a lot of other things needing to happen to get the best out of him, to properly get the best out of the remaining time in his career. Ultimately, Atletico did hang on for the win, but there was drama, of course, in the final 20 minutes or so. Jose Jimenez had to make a goal line clearance from Luis Hernandez with Oblak caught completely out of the net. Oblak's form is still not at all convincing. He doesn't look really remotely confident, Robbie, and we'll have to see what happens with him over the summer because his contract's about to end. He's got a year left, a little more than a year left on his contract, and no real news as to a renewal. So this is probably getting to the end of Oblak's Atletico career too, but for an entirely different reason. Jimenez makes that goal line clearance to keep it 2-1. Javi Serrano then gets sent off. To me, this was never a red card. This was a makeup call from Gonzalez Fuertes. Serrano goes in on Alex Fernandez. It's a reckless challenge, but it's one-footed. Studs were down, and I think this was a pretty clear makeup call. The Metropolitano goes insane entering stoppage time, but Atletico do hang on and get the win. Weird decision to send off a 19-year-old kid. for that.
Yeah, I think he probably suffered from the fact that he went in. It felt like it was one of those ones where it just felt like he had lost control.
Totally.
He had lost. I think it was a let it go, trying to hang on to the lead, and it just felt like Javi Serrano, he kind of dived in for the first tackle. I'm just going to pull it up here and watch it again, because he kind of jumps in the first tackle, and then for the second one, then he goes in and the player goes down, and it probably looks like he had completely lost control of what he was trying to do, and I think that's why he suffered, rather than if that was just a standalone tackle. Like, yeah, like when you look at that back, and he went over the ball to actually touch it the first time, he that's a bad touch, and the referee is looking, going, what's this guy going to do? And then he just absolutely steamrolls into Alex Fernandez with his foot up, and it's like, that's a red card. It's not just the tackle. It's what happened before that, and him being headless then going in like that. I think that's probably why he got the red card. And I guess that makes sense there, yeah. Like, if you look back at that first... I don't even know what you call it. What is that? He's kicking the ball. He's trying to clear it, but follows through.
It's not clean tackling form. I'll give it that.
Yeah, that first one, I mean, yeah? And
yeah.
Then the second one, he chases it down. You can see it a mile away. Alex Fernandez is... And you can see it a mile away then that this guy is going to do something. And then referees... And then once the red card comes out, it's not going to get overturned. Like, so...
No, because it already had been once.
Probably a little bit unlucky, I would say, yes. But again, something you just have to learn from, I guess, as a 19-year-old.
I think that's a fair point, too, is that it was the second... tackling attempt in succession. If it had been an isolated incident, it would have been much less justifiable. But yeah, as you said, Serrano had just attempted a tackle mere seconds earlier that went unpunished. So in the heat of the moment, the referee's thinking, yeah, I've already had one red card downgraded to a yellow this time. It's going to be harder to I got to make it a big decision. I have to be really decisive here. And yeah, I think it's a fair point, because the two actions were so close together. But even still, it was Atletico fans and players are going to continue complaining about the officiating. And Sergio, the Cádiz coach, was very critical after the game, saying the González Fuertes was not balanced. And it takes, I think Sam Leverage wrote this in our Three Things column earlier today, it takes a special kind of referee to piss both teams off so significantly.
Yeah, I think that's just refereeing in La Liga. It can be so finicky, and it can be so. But I also think that's the players' fault as well. They're diving around and jumping around on the ground from the very, very, very first moment, and I think that's it's so hard for a referee. I genuinely think it's an impossible job for a referee in La Liga. There's diving, there's dives, and there's jumping around. There's trying to get players in trouble. There's no, I genuinely don't know one good faith player that's like not looking constantly for an edge, which is fair enough. I just think it's impossible. It's impossible for referees in La Liga. It's impossible for referees in general, but in La Liga, especially hard. And then every single little thing, polemica. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the league, the media feeds off this, so I mean, I don't know if there's an appetite to fix it either, because it's like, this is just kind of ingrained in how it's almost accepted that this is how it's played. So it's and that's what you say when a referee pisses off both teams, it's because he's just trying to not lose control. And these guys, if they're given an inch, they'll just completely take it and run, and the game turns into a farce at that point. And it's impossible.
Yeah, the polemica, El Chiringuito dedicates hours per week to discussing the polemica. The polemicas, Robbie.
Yeah, what would they do if there was no polemicas? Well, we know what they do. They'd invent them anyway.
Right.
So like, it's impossible. Even the stuff that's kind of I've spoken to you about this in the past. I'm kind of like, look, if I can understand it, fair. And if it makes some sense, and look, you can. But the problem is when they make senseless calls, I understand. But when you can understand why a referee would do something. And look, we like, what do they call it, the narcissism of small differences. Like, I mean, it's not, I'm not going to fight with you over the smallest thing. It's just, you know, we're never going to absolutely completely agree on this, so let's just leave it. But if I can see that the referee is trying to, but the problem is accumulation of errors and kind of not letting the game flow and stopping the game, and I think that's down to the players too. And And I've always said this, the only guy, the only referee with a little bit of personality in the Liga is the one guy who everyone laughs at, and that's Matteo Laws.
That's right.
But I'd watch him. He's an excellent referee, and there's a reason why he gets the biggest games in world football, because he does have a personality and he does kind of interpret it. Because at the end of the day, people are like, oh, it should be black and white. It can never be black and white, because there's humans involved and they're trying to interpret it constantly at an elite level, like with players moving so fast, so it's literally impossible for it to be black and white, and there's a million different ways a ball can be handled in the area and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just it's quite tiring, really.
And as you said, it genuinely is a big issue that players in Spain in La Liga go down very easy. There's a lot of diving, a lot of flopping, a lot of light contact, engineered for this very reason, to try to engineer a response from the referee, a red card, a yellow card, some other kind of admonition. And the ball's in play in La Liga only 53-54 minutes a game, and it's among the lowest total in the big leagues in Europe. I think it's the lowest total among the top five leagues, so that's got to be solved one way or another. There has to be a solution forthcoming there, because it doesn't strike me as sustainable. There are controversies every single week, whether they are there is no, you know, black and white. There's always a gray area. There always will be. That's kind of the point. There are complaints every single week, though, and it just, there's something has to be overhauled at some level of the game by the federation.
And it's frustrating as well, because if that was the way they were and they just couldn't take contact, and they were just weaker literally than the opposition, that'd be fair enough. But they go out in Europe then and they can mix it. They absolutely can. They completely change their game. They know, I'm not going to get a free for this, so I'm not going to fall over. Whereas in La Liga, they're falling over and rolling around, and they wouldn't do that in Europe. And the other thing is, just finally on this, is that, like, if you were watching Sevilla and West Ham the other day, En-Nesyri went down, and Declan Rice went to pick him up off the ground, like, get up, like, you know. And it's the kind of thing where you would never do that in Spain, because it's like, I know he's tricking me, he knows he's tricking me, the referee knows he's tricking me, but that's the way it is. Whereas Declan Rice was like, get up, like, have some self-respect, lying on the ground, like, there's nothing wrong with you. And it's the kind of thing, it's kind of amateur and it's kind of funny, but it's just a quick snapshot into how these players, or how the two different leagues are played. And okay, I'm not saying the Premier League is perfect by any stretch, and there is diving and there is play acting and stuff like that, but this rolling around the ground after 5 minutes and there's no actual reason other than literally get the other guy in trouble, I can understand time wasting, and that's a pretty decent strategy. The point is, 5 minutes into the game, when you're rolling around trying to get someone sent off, or trying to get an advantage, or trying to turn the referee against, or trying to get it to the point where the referee feels like he owes you something or something like that, it's not very nice. Very, very, very cynical approach to the game. And yeah, like you said, it has to be fixed, but I genuinely don't think that they even see that there's anything wrong with it. But it's just, and aside from it being cynical, it's just not really enjoyable to watch either, like, is it?
No, not for me, and not for you either. I'd imagine. Well, in Europe this week, Robbie, Atletico are traveling to Old Trafford to face Man United, the second leg of their Champions League round of 16 tie. Let's shift gears and talk about that now. The biggest game of Atletico's season, without much question. United 3-2 winners over Tottenham on Saturday, and Atleti's old nemesis at it again. A hat trick from Cristiano Ronaldo he scored it in 70 minutes with assists from Fred, Jadon Sancho, and Alex Telles, three different players assisting his hat-trick goals. He's gearing up to welcome Atletico to Old Trafford. Will Atletico be ready to pocket him on Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's I think there's a kind of a feeling, I don't really watch United enough, I've seen them a bit and that, but I do think that there's a general feeling around some of the guys who I read and listen to, that Man United are slowly starting to adapt to Ragnick's, what he's trying to do. Now, how they were deplorable basically against Atletico in 2 weeks ago. So, or was it 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? So I don't know how much it could have changed. It'll probably suit Atletico again, given the fact that they won't want the ball and United will want the ball. So it'll suit Atletico in that sense. But it's a game that literally could go either way. I wouldn't be surprised if United, I don't, given how Atletico are playing, I don't think they'll beat them comfortably. I don't think it'll be a 2-0 or 3-0, but I do think that Atletico could easily win, and I believe that, and United likewise could win either, and I really don't know how it's going to go.
I'm gearing up for a long day Tuesday, not because of the scoreline, or I think it'll be a beating like it was in Turin a few years ago when Atletico took a 2-0 lead to Juventus and it went disastrously. I'm preparing for a long day in that I think this could easily go to extra time, could easily go to penalties. These teams are pretty equal still, and made more equal by Atletico's injury crisis. There could be up to 8 players not available for this game Tuesday. Jeffrey Kondogbia is in a race against time to get fit. He is the priority for Atletico's medical staff. Jose Jimenez has a problem with his foot. There were conflicting reports in both Spanish papers this morning about whether he would play or whether he'd be out for 3 weeks. No one seems to know. Daniel Vaz could make the trip, but it's unlikely that he would start if he were to make the trip. Mateus Cunha is still out as well. Yannick Carrasco suspended. Tomalema is injured and going to be out till after the international break. So the injuries could make it an even more level playing field, and these two teams could just go back and forth for 90-120 minutes. I'm definitely gearing up for that, because to me they're still pretty equal, and they still have similar strengths and weaknesses, even though Atletico have been playing a lot better relative to their earlier season form in the past 3 weeks. This is still really close to call. I can definitely see this going on a long time, and it really could go either way. I agree with you.
Yeah, and it depends how Ragnick sets up. He played at Matic tonight, and Matic definitely takes away the mobility and the pressing and from United, whereas someone like McTominay plays, he's obviously way more aggressive, or way gets around more and stuff like that, but he leaves United more open on the counter and stuff. He leaves United more open. He's not the anchor that Matic is, but likewise, Matic doesn't shields the defence better. And that's actually a tweet. I was reading Kees van Hemmen's tweet. He basically, that's what he said, and it makes complete sense. And I was watching some of the game tonight, and that's exactly what Matic does. He knits it together nicely. Whether or not Ragnick plays with that kind of a style could be the difference. Could be the difference maker on during the week.
Yeah, Matic came on in the first leg, and United started to play a lot better. They had a lot more balance and a lot more purpose. No Bruno Fernandes on Saturday, as he tested positive for COVID, which likely rules him out for Tuesday. I'm not sure that's a really big loss, though. Bruno did not play well in the first leg. Neither did Pogba, who played all 90 minutes on Saturday. I wonder if that will inform the team selection for Tuesday. For Atletico, from the Rojiblanco point of view, having Kondogbia back could be the difference between advancing and going out at the last 16 for the second year in a row, and for the third time in 4 years. Kondogbia just offers something that literally no other midfielder in Atletico's squad does. And if he is there, it offers a lot more security and ball retention and even ball progression. Kondogbia is a really good passer too, in addition to his defensive qualities, his strength, his athleticism, his power. But if he's not there and Koke starts again, oh boy, it could swing completely in the opposite direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that obviously will have a massive thing. There's nobody, like you said, in the squad like Kondogbia. Herrera kind of does a good tribute act at times, but no, it doesn't. He doesn't really translate 100%. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether he makes it or not.
Well, we're going to be here to talk about it no matter what happens, Robbie. That'll do it for this edition of Colchonero Chat. Thank you so much for joining me, man. Appreciate it.
No worries at all. And we'll definitely catch you in midweek.
Oh, yeah. We will be back to talk all about it. Man United and Atletico Madrid at Old Trafford. Game of the year. Maybe. We'll see. And we'll be back to talk all about it. Thank you all for listening to this edition of the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Into the Calderon and keep track of all our written content and audio content at IntoTheCalderon.com, as well as Patreon.com/ColtGeneroChat. You can also subscribe to the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network on Spotify to catch up with all new episodes, all recent episodes you may have missed. And until next time, adios.